Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Relative Pitch. We are so excited to have the Dr. Kendra Wheeler, assistant professor of saxophone from Louisiana State University. Okay, go Tigers. Here
right?
With us.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, Dr. Wheeler, welcome.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me, you all. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. And again, I'm just going to say this because people are going to say it. We are not just inviting Southerners on the podcast. It just happens.
It's just natural.
It's a natural.
We're everywhere. Right. We're just everywhere.
So. Michael may be limiting. Michael's limiting. But me and Anthony are not limiting. It just happens.
It happens.
Here's the thing. If you want to come on the pod, you got to know how to season food.
Ooh. I mean, that's a good one. That is a good thing. I'll say.
Thank you. Just saying.
Right. Don't be taking me down if you can't eat. All right, okay. Dr. Wheeler, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself before we get into it?
Yeah. So yes, I'm new to Louisiana State University as I'm finishing up. I'm in my 14th week here in my first semester as assistant professor of saxophone, but I'm coming from the Pacific Northwest, actually, where I used to teach for 3 years at Central Washington University. Which is great. And the PNW is very different, of course, from my Baton Rouge, but I'm not mad about it. And, you know, that gym membership is more critical now than ever in my life being here, but it's been really, really good. And Louisiana State's just a massive institution. So there's just so much going on. My colleagues are fantastic, inspirational, and the students are great. So all of that's been really awesome. I'm from Chicago. My family's in Chicago. Spent a lot of time in the Midwest. So I did 2 degrees at University of Minnesota and then get my doctorate at Michigan State. So again, a lot of Midwest, Michigan, Minnesota, Illinois, even though it's really just Chicago, as we all know, that exists there. So yeah, I mean, that's just a little bit about how I got here, I suppose.
Wow, that's so crazy, because you're really jumped around a lot already, because I didn't even know, I should have known that you were here at Central Washington. I literally am here at the University of Washington. That's crazy.
Your full professor, please tell me her name again. Okay, yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were crossing paths just a little bit for a few years.
That's so cool, because like, honestly, I'm so used to people doing that Midwest to like Southern to Midwest back to the South thing, because it feels like most of our director of bands, like for whatever reason, like did that a lot, like Southern to Midwest pipeline. Mm-hmm. Michael did that because he was at Western Michigan. But like, I hear a lot of people jumping over to PNW and then kind of coming back and everything. So like, I mean, for you, like shifting around and everything, because if you've never visited the Pacific Northwest, it is very different. The structure of bands, especially,
different
than like the Southern band. So, like, what was the learning curve that you really like took away from that?
Yeah, I came from the Midwest too, which is also very different from the South when it comes to band. And for saxophone, band is everything, right? Like, that's our bread and butter. We don't have orchestra and other things. So, bands are very, very important. Yes. And in the PNW, it's interesting. I mean, there at Central Washington, it's interesting too. At the time I got there, there was a very live band culture that was alive and well. I mean, orchestra is very strong there. Of course, commercial music, jazz, it's very, very hip out on the West Coast. But your classical concert band was maybe not as popular. But at least during my time there, I didn't have any issues. It was a growing culture, I think, there. Now, in the Midwest, you know, we have private lessons, we have band, there's a lot of programs, and of course in the South, band is through and through, especially marching band, and so I guess maybe it was a little bit of a hurdle, but actually not as much as you might have thought, for me at least, in the time that I was there, because the band culture was really started to grow a little bit.
Yeah. What... As you, you know, grew into what you are today, how was the beginnings of starting on saxophone and going through that whole process? What was it like doing that for you?
Yeah. So, you know, the way, I don't know, I don't think all schools are like this, but in my little suburb of Illinois, of the suburbs of Chicagoland area, my little elementary school at the time, or middle school, I don't remember, I was in fourth grade, so whatever that is, middle school?
Elementary.
Elementary, okay. It's so far back. I don't know. the way it worked at that time was, you were able to get out of some classes for a little bit because they couldn't have a structured band class. So they would end certain classes early so that they could meet for band during one specific hour of the day, right? So whatever class you were in, you got out for 20 minutes to go have band. And it was really weird, but that's how that worked at that time. And so I was like, okay, I can bite, I can do that, I can get out of math, I can get out of whatever for a little bit and go do this thing. So I ended up joining band. I chose the saxophone, somehow ended up getting placed on saxophone because everybody wants to play the saxophone because it's
Yeah.
shiny. In the beginning, they placed me on the instrument, and kind of never looked back. I mean, I stayed in band all the way through high school, but I was actually very much a nerd. I had an electrical or mechanical, some sort of engineering internship with Northrop Grumman, the engineering firm in the United States. And so the pipeline was set up for me. I did this throughout high school to go into an engineering degree, and probably end up working for them afterwards. And the kind of cliche thing happened where you have a band director that's, legit and invested.
Yeah.
And I had one who was not only a saxophone player, but invested and very good at what he did. And he was just like, I see you, I see you, I see you. Take lessons with me, take lessons with me. I see you, I see you, I see you. And I was like, no, I'm good, thank you. But after a while, that broke down on top of my mom being like, give it one more year and you can quit and we can move on with this thing, but just do it, just do it.
Yeah.
So when you have these sort of forces kind of working for you and with you, and around you, you give in. So I started taking lessons and I never looked back after that. So my end of my junior year into my senior year, I kind of worked my butt off. I was riding off of maybe natural talent, even though I don't really like to say that exists because I think everyone's talented, everyone has talent. But I wasn't really practicing up until that point. And then I was like, ooh, I really like this. I really like music. I really enjoy this camaraderie, collaboration, this relationship that I have with my private lesson teacher, my band director. He's awesome. I want to do that. So for my end of my junior year into my senior year, over the summer, worked my butt off, started practicing scales, started practicing in general. And he gave me recommendations for some great programs, great teachers. He was well connected. He was a fantastic saxophone player himself. I ended up being enrolled in the Merritt School of Music, which is in downtown Chicago in the South Loop, and did that also for a year. So weekends, evenings, I was in quartets. I was in their top ensemble. I just really had, I think, really positive structure, positive forces around me, who were rooting for me, even if I didn't quite understand what was happening at the time, and putting me in positions and places to get things done as long as I was working towards those things. And so I think that's I owe a lot of where I am now to Sean Tracy, who was my saxophone teacher and my band teacher in high school, and Brian Polacek, who was also my wind ensemble teacher at Merritt School of Music. Like, these two forces are very hard on me, but very much supportive, guiding me throughout. So yeah, then it was just saxophone and teaching and music and school. Yeah.
It's so funny that you say that because I think, like, for I don't know if it was for I can't remember for all of us, but I never really thought about taking that next step as you're talking about as well. And I knew I really liked music. I knew that I thought I was, had some kind of talent, whether it was natural or I just happened to practice hot cross buns enough. And I was like, oh, this sounds kind of cute now. But like we don't, I feel like what should be emphasized with like any mentors, even a parent, because you're speaking about how like your mom played a huge role in that encouragement. Sometimes just saying, what if we just gave it another year? What if we just tried this or maybe try, and you never know how many pushes, or like gentle nudging, it could take to get someone to just consider it. Because the truth is, if someone, especially a student, doesn't want to do anything, like they're pretty opinionated, but no, I don't want to do that. I don't
Oh,
want
yeah.
to. Especially
I don't
nowadays.
want to. They're like, absolutely
Especially
not.
nowadays. Especially. So like for you, that was exactly what you needed. You were kind of on a track already, sounds like, for engineering, and like that would have happened, right? And that's like alternate universe. I think about my alternate universes all the time. What if I went to that school? What if I went into becoming a medical doctor? All these things. like that path was there and you were nudged into something else. And it could have been, you might have been like in a different world, like, no, I still really like engineering and maybe I just want to play saxophone in the community later on, which we know many people who do that. There's like so many really amazing community ensembles who they're made up of lawyers and doctors and et cetera, and they still play their instruments. They support their local arts community, and we need those people too. So like I always want to emphasize that like it's never a bad thing still if your student who's in your band room wants to go do something else, because we do need doctors. We need people who are researching like what's happening in space. Well, you know, what's the climate going to be in like 50 years and everything. But it's really cool if they also still play trumpet, you know, like not trumpet specifically. Let me not shout out Michael, but like, but no, I love that.
Well, I will say just real quick, I was looking at, you went and got your bachelor's in music ed. Did you have the kind of want to need to become a band director or music director in general, or were you like, I want to always play saxophone and be able to teach saxophone in a more holistic way?
No, the original intention was to teach band. It was straight up. I was like through and through, this is what I want to do. Period. It was to teach. It was like I want to teach. But yeah, I thought for maybe 2.5 years of my undergrad that it was definitely going to be ideally high school band, but knowing that I might start out with middle school band, like it was just going to be band, I was going to teach, and I was going to, you know, work that system and get into it. I was a band nerd at that time, but then I don't know, somewhere in my junior and senior year, I'm in these schools, I'm teaching, I'm doing all these things, and it's like cool and it's great, but I realized like, oh, like I'm also working my butt off. So I did basically, without getting the degree, performance and ed track on the same level. And I'm like, well, like I just want to get better at the instrument for a while. I like school. I want to continue to learn. I want to deepen my interest in some things. You know, I like kind of like musicology. I hate theory right now, but you know, whatever, it's fine. Like, you know, I'll be okay. Yeah, I'm just like a super nerd in that way. So I was like, let me go to school and get a master's in performance so I can continue playing, getting better at the instrument, kind of learning myself and figure it out and see if band is really truly what I want to do, or if I do want to try to invest in becoming a saxophone professor and teaching solely this instrument or maybe some other side thing along the way. So yeah, it definitely started out band. And then the later part of my undergrad degree, I was like, oh, I like this practicing thing, kind of like saxophone. And I was also starting to gig with other people at the time and like get in the community and play. And that was also really cool for me. So I was like, oh, okay, let's do that.
Is it? Yeah.
I have two questions. Well, one is, have you been to Death Valley
I have,
yet?
yes, I have. I have been to
Death
Death Valley.
Valley.
That's
Wait, what is
the LSU
that?
stadium. That's the LSU stadium.
It's the Tiger Stadium. It's
Oh, I was
like
like,
during football games, Death Valley.
it's known to be one of the loudest stadiums
It's
in
pretty
the country.
loud. It's pretty
Especially
crazy.
at a night game. Woo!
You can't tell them nothing. You can't
That's
tell
what
them nothing
I'm
at 12:30 p.m. either on
saying.
a Saturday.
They will
Vegas.
chant. They were literally chanting, fire our coach right now in the middle of a game.
I know.
It was crazy. It
Yeah,
was
they
crazy.
do that.
But
They do that. But
they
they're not
won't.
shy. They're
They
not
ain't.
shy.
They
They're
won't.
not shy. Yeah.
Now, I was looking at your YouTube earlier as we were like doing the research and stuff. And what I loved, and this is no dig at the saxophone world,
Ooh.
you play really, really pretty melodies with an amazing sound. And
Oh,
you don't do a lot
thank
of the people, people.
you.
Stop it.
My
Stop
favorite.
it. So,
My favorite topic about saxophone. We did
okay.
it.
So,
It's totally fine.
amazing. So I like because of that, like I have some saxophone friends and they play all that kind of music, which is fine. It's great music. What attracts you to these like more melody type songs? And then like what influences your sound? Because like when I turned it on and I was like doing housework, I said, that don't sound like the saxophone that I know. That sound really nice and velvety. So talk to me about that.
Yeah, sound okay. Well, let me start with kind of the first part of this, and I get this a lot actually. With saxophone, like people just they come to me and they're just like, "What is it about saxophone and why classical saxophone and why not jazz?" And of course, that's also the testament to my family because I grew up in a family that classical what? Like it was nothing. There was nothing. It was classic R&B,
Yes,
soul. But it
mm-hmm.
wasn't classical music, right? And so they had smooth jazz records, they had jazz records, they had, all of these things playing, but none of it was ever classical. So I always inevitably get the question of how did you end up in this thing, and doing this thing? And I think all of these entities sort of make up who I am as a saxophone player. I do think everyone's entitled to playing their own thing. You do you play the music that resonates with you. But I don't see artistry and musicianship or playing the saxophone as being an acrobatic sport. I see it as being a vessel of music making and communication and sharing something with someone. Now, sometimes what you share does need to be people home, it needs to be that. But it maybe doesn't always need to be that. And I feel very strongly about trying to break down this notion that you need to play every note possible to exist as fast and as high as possible in order to be deemed valid musician. Like I don't think those things equal one another. Like the most beautiful things in this world don't always aren't always complex. Sometimes they are really quite simple, but simple doesn't mean easy, and simple doesn't mean bad. And I think it's really, really hard, and it's almost a lost skill these days of playing a melody. How do you play a melody? How do you play phrase? What is a phrase? What is shape? What is color? What is character? And I think I can only speak for saxophone because it's my world. Sometimes we get lost in the sauce. Sometimes we get lost in the validity of the instrument, trying to prove that this instrument is a classical instrument to be compared to and equal to violin and strings. And I think we've actually done that. Like, I really do. I think we've proved that we can play a lot of notes and we can play hard music and we can do those things, and that is a great feat of many people in our field who've done wonderful work advancing the instrument in that way. Absolutely, like without fail, we did need pedagogical, technical advancement. Totally. And we did need to prove that we can hang. I agree, but I just don't think that means that we need to look down on or get rid of and all the other things, because then we find ourselves stealing music from every other instrument because it has melody, because it has phrase, because it has substance, because it has content, because we like the way it sounds. And then we look at our music and we go, oh, I just want to play this. No, you want to play that because you resonate with so much of it. And the stuff that we have sometimes doesn't resonate with you. So I just find that a lot of students too coming up in this pipeline have this issue. Like I just work with so many music ed students and so many students who at some point come to the realization of like, I don't know why I'm doing this, and I don't really know why I'm playing this music other than for this jury, and I have no relationship to it whatsoever. And it's hard for me then to teach skills of communication and musicality when you're not invested in that thing. So it's not that I won't play the bebops and the bloops. I totally will, and I actually like some of that very much. I really like it weird. I do. I like weird music. I like crazy things, but I also just find a lot of enjoyment out of beautiful things that are melodic. And I think things can, they again, those things can work in tandem. You can have melody and you can have technique. But even if you only play melody, it does not void you of being an excellent musician. And being able to hold your own against those that can do absolute wonders on the instrument. Sound concept, I don't know. I listen to a lot of music. I listen to a lot of music. I listen to a lot of jazz, actually. I love my fellow jazz musicians. They do some hard stuff. I love it. But yeah, I don't know. Sound concept wise, sounds the most important thing to me, and I spend a lot of time and a little bit maybe neurotic about it. But very, very particular about these entities that I want to hear for myself. And I actually don't know how I arrived there. I just know that I'm very particular and I have an idea of what I want to sound like. And it changes over the years for sure. But I, for my students and myself, I try to prioritize sound concept, something unique to you, tried and true. But get in there. You got to like the way you sound in order to communicate to your best extent. And so I think just all the things that have influenced me in my lifetime. So the music I listened to, the music I grew up to, definitely jazz saxophone players influenced me, and the robustness of their sound and how big it is and how much variety there is in it, which I think classical saxophone is on its way to all that variety too. Quite a lot of American classical saxophone sound variety.
I resonate with like what you just said and why you said it is like I love the weird stuff, and I like certain weird things. Like there's a particularness to the weirdness that I like extremely like dissonant harmonies. I like just like living in that uncomfortable, like I want everybody to be on like I don't like this because it makes my body feel weird, like that kind of stuff. And because but like so many students now don't do the simple things well, which is like play with a great sound and play a melody. Like look in front of you. I don't care if it's fast, baby. I'll go 20 clicks slower and I will phrase it. Now you're gonna be like, wow, it's 20 clicks slower. I'll be like, but baby, did you hear that phrase?
Exactly.
Like, when you heard that turn, like turning a phrase and playing a melody is like lost sometimes for the technical aspect of instruments and to like catch up with some of these things. And I just gave a lecture on this piece, and you probably know this because this is your area. How do you feel about the Pulitzer Prize winning Adagio for saxophone?
Yeah, I love that it has won a Pulitzer, and I love the piece. I think it's great. But many people might look at that and go, too easy, right? Because it's adagio. It's slow. It's whole notes, half notes. It's push and pull. It's how do you sit on this note, right? And I tell my students this all the time. Don't just sit on a note. Please do something with this note, right? You're just sitting on it. Like, where's it going? Where's it coming from? Like, you're bored and I'm bored, right?
Me
You
too.
Just trying to count the four and I'm trying to count when it's over. Like, you know, we need to go somewhere and come from something. And I think that piece is beautiful. It's gorgeous. And there's a lot of color. There's a lot of possibility for shape and phrase, and uniqueness for the performer, right? Because everybody can approach that in a number of different ways. And I love that Timothy McAllister premiered it. And I love that it's, I think, gaining the acclaim that it should have. But it's not, you know, like a lot of our other pieces. It's actually the opposite of many of our other pieces, but it puts the saxophone in a very unique, special light, I think. I think it's wonderful. I think it's a really good work for us.
Well, it's funny that you said it's like unlike a lot of them. It's like slow. It's like they're, because that's literally, I teach music appreciation at my university, and we do a whole lecture on Pulitzer Prize winning because we talk a lot about the Kendrick thing. A lot about that Duke Ellington debacle where he wasn't awarded the Pulitzer when he probably should have. And so we talked about this, and someone was like, that's not like the saxophone that I hear.
Right.
I hear a lot of notes usually. And because another thing I show is Coltrane's Interstellar Space.
Oh, yeah.
Which is just drum set and him just popping off
the whole
and
time.
It literally from start to finish, 11 minutes. Let's go.
Totally. That is a feat. That is a feat. That is a more than a marathon.
Yes.
Amen. But I had to just ask about that since I had your ear.
No, totally. I mean, for both ends too, right? Like jazz world and classical world, the saxophone is the thing. It is notes. It is melody, definitely. And I think jazz musicians tap into playing a ballad so well because they utilize so much color and character. And this is something that I think sometimes is not always taught as rigorously on the classical side, that we can have different inflections and colors and we can try to find that in our playing. But yeah, it's known as a notey instrument, right? Like jazz musicians out this world with this technique, all these notes. Yeah, and then the classical end trying to hold their own, right? To do the same thing. So yeah, it's known as a notey instrument. And oftentimes what we get to is, you know, the instrument that honks a lot because we play a lot of multiphonics and a lot of weird sounds that way. our low register sometimes is a little bit thick in comparison maybe to our clarinet colleagues. And there's just certain saxophone characteristics, and I love all of them, but I think we should and celebrate all the different things that the saxophone can do.
Absolutely. I agree. So for in the band world, because I'm about to give a whole lecture presentation on this, specifically about Black music and the pieces that have been written by Black composers that use our terminology, like vibe, and how that's the lost art. Because vibe just means chill out, relax, let's do something with something that is simple, and how so many people will play a piece that's just, you're supposed to just vibe it out. And they're trying to think about it as if it is 16 note passages for the next 62 measures. And it's like, no, that in itself is a technique, and it's you have to be proficient at it. But so as well as the whole notes that leans into this next half note, that leans into a quarter note, what happens between the black notes? And I think you have these 16 note passages, like, okay, I can just go note to note. But something slower, baby, you got to think about what's in between these notes and how are you going to convey that message. And that is a lost art in a lot of instruments today, as well as when you get into the large ensemble. For, as a conductor myself, the thing that, that people want to do is the things that's fast. I'm like, that's great. But I'm really going to judge a band based on, all right, here is your lyrical piece. Let me see what you do with this. Let me see how you play this. Do you have a concept of what it sounds like? Do you have a concept of what is your opinion of the piece? That's what I always want to hear. What is your opinion of this piece? Or did you take this opinion? Can you talk about how your journey of developing your own opinion of how you play? Because I was listening to, I don't want to mispronounce this piece. Is it Nyama? Is that the piece?
Naama,
Nyama.
Naama.
I was listening to you play that and I was like, oh my goodness. Like, I could tell you had an opinion of how this piece went, and it was just portrayed so beautifully. What was your kind of behind the scenes of getting to developing your own opinion of your playing?
Oh, that's such a good question. I think these things come in with time and exploration and with wanting to understand how you best learn things and work, right? Like, one, just I think simply, yes, time. I wasn't always that way, right? We're studying in school and our teachers are telling us, do this thing, play this way, do this way, this is how this goes. But I think I was fortunate enough to have teachers who actually were slightly against the grain in that way and were actually asking me, what do you think? Or like I've had in my undergrad, I studied with Eugene Rousseau, who's just a legacy name for saxophone, and he unfortunately just passed away. But huge part of my life, a huge mentor, just a gem of a person in the classical saxophone world, especially in the United States, owes a lot to him, but everywhere. That aside, so many lessons as an undergrad, where he would look at me, studying these works that he either knew very intimately or was a part of the, a commissioning process or worked with the composer. So things that he knows super well with historical, social, all the context. And he would just simply ask me, what do you think? How should that phrase go? I'm asking him, I'm like, is that right? Is that how it should be played? Do I do this right here? Can I do this here? He's like, I don't know, can you? I was like, I don't know, can I? He's like, oh, do you like the way it sounds? And so it's like these sorts of communications and moments at the time went over my head. I was just like, oh, okay, I guess I'll just do it this way. I don't know, I'll do it that way. I'll go listen and do it the way this other person does it. So, like I don't get it wrong. But in hindsight, in retrospect, that's exactly how I teach. So it's exactly how I approach things. Is there's always possibilities, but you need to figure out what you're trying to say. And if you don't know what you're trying to say, it's going to come across that way when you play. So I think I spend a lot of time in that process when I'm learning something new, whether it's technical or purely melodic. I spend a lot of time in the listening phase to other people play to see what they're trying to say. and how they're saying it, with the colors and inflections that they might be using. I spend a lot of time just looking at the piece too, and trying weird things. And I spend a lot of time recording myself and listening back and trying to say, that works, that doesn't work. But I think a lot of my practice time when I'm actually learning music, and not like doing fundamental stuff, is in, well, okay, these notes are on the page and they have this structure, but what is it really, what's the point? Like, what am I doing here, and why am I trying to do this thing? And I also try to be very deliberate about the music that I program, if I'm giving the concert, if it's not something that I have to do for other obligations, because if I'm not into it fully, I'm not into it. And it's gonna be real hard to do that level of work that I feel like I need to be satisfied and fulfilled with a performance. But don't get me wrong, even if I have to play something, I'm still trying to stick my foot in it. Like, I'm still go there. But there's always just something special when you are really truthfully 100% invested in the message.
Oh my gosh, my brain's like racking because like there's like so many things that you said earlier and also you just said now about specifically identity. And I know that's something that you have done a lot of work on either cultivating for yourself or your students and in collaboration with other like Black female saxophonists who are out in the world. Can you talk a little bit more to identity? Because like we were also talking about validity a while back in regard to saxophone as an instrument and like the feeling of needing to, you know, be a slip and slide when it comes to notes, like to feel valid and as a another instrument that is known for and all that stuff. Like it truly sometimes like when I feel connected to my music the most is when I feel like I can sing it. And so and it really ties I'm doing a lot of work on like research on Portia Malsby, who is like an ethnomusicologist, and she specifically like has done research on like hymnals and spirituals and like Black music specifically. And when I really think about it, I'm like, our culture has been so rooted in the melody and the sound and just like what, how do you sing it? How does it feel? How does it resonate in your body? And of course we know melismas and glissandi, all those things come naturally to us, which is why jazz is like we're dominating it, because all it, just interpreting a simple melody into all these different like levels is something that is so like in our bodies and in our histories and legacies. But like for me, I'm so moved when I just hear someone singing a spiritual just like beautifully, they just round it out the way they want to. Like that's what really gets me. And like whenever I play music, I can play the, you know, the boop bops and all that. And like sometimes that's like super fun. And like I'll even find the phrasing there as we're supposed to, right, as musicians. But you're the lost art of like just like finding that melody and singing it. I ask my students so often, like, are you able to sing that to me right now? And like when they do sing it, I'm like, oh, did you like that though? Did it sound the way that you thought it did in your head, right? And so, and I feel like all of it connects back to identity of like, you know, I started off singing, I was in church choir, and then I did like actual choir. And I feel like that so much is translated into my own flute playing, because I feel like flute as an instrument just feels like I'm seeing through it. And so, but I also have to connect with my own personal identity when I'm playing it, and whether that's through the bebops or whether that's through like the actual, you know, melodic phrasing. And I wanted to know if that's ever something that you've like, it's, identity is something, you, again, you have done a lot of like research and talks on and like uplifting, advocating collaboration with and around. So, how does that play into like the work that you're currently doing?
Yeah, I think it plays a big role for sure, and I agree with you. I think at the root of a lot of things is the voice and how you use the voice, right? Not only the voice in terms of melody, but in terms of speaking, activism. It's like the voice is central, and it's one of the most vulnerable things we have. Now, yes, as instrumentalists, I think it's equally vulnerable to have an instrument and try to sing through that thing, but just the voice has been such a pillar, especially in Black communities. And if you think, for me at least, the way I view a lot of classical music is, yes, we've always had Black folk and classical music, but where we've never been shy at being in classical music is opera, is like really being prevalent there and being you know, leaders in that field. And I think a lot of that has to do with, yet again, this resonance, this desire to showcase emotion, feeling, whatever, through the voice. So I also like to see if I can find a way to think through things or have students think through things, because your ears and your mind and your body and your spirit just moves in a certain way when you try to put it out there in that way. Mm-hmm. The instrument sometimes is actually a hindrance to that, and blocks you from that, and blocks you from that vulnerability too. But for identity, I think the thing that I've noticed, one, there's not a lot of women of color in general in classical saxophone, although a growing number. But if we are to like disaggregate that data even further, then there's not a lot of Black women in classical saxophone in the United States. I can't speak for the world because it's too big for my scope right now. But in the United States, professionally, and so by professionally I mean working either in an institution or like a soloist, right? And I've noticed over time that we've grown with Black men playing classical saxophone, and that's been a really big push, a category that's grown. Maybe not push because it might not have been conscious, but it's happened. And I think it's happened for several reasons. We've just had a number of, we've had more representation in that way. And I think that along the pipeline, you're a young Black man studying classical saxophone, and you see these models. It makes it a lot easier for you, I think, to, nothing's easy, but it makes it safer to go further on that path. And I don't think that's been the case necessarily for Black women. So when it comes to identity, it's something that's always on my mind because, you know, oftentimes I'm in a room alone in terms of being a Black woman. Classical saxophone is not alone in people, but in representation. And I noticed that there are, start to see Black women studying, but then I don't always see them go forward, right, with either a graduate degree or enter the profession. And I'm really curious about that. So over my time, something that's important is, one, trying to increase the diversity of music repertoire that we have available for classical saxophone so that maybe more people start to see themselves in other types of music that aren't necessarily like, for instance, that aren't Negro spiritual based or spiritual based, right? That aren't Korean folk songs, and that only now Korean musicians can play this thing. It's that, no, I think putting out any type of folk based music, and by folk, you know, it just means everything, really. That and getting more people to perform all of the different types of music that are inspired by all these things, I think people will start to see the cross-cultural things that we share in our music, because there's a lot of similarities. I was working with a student on a piece that was influenced by the Sichuan province and their traditional work songs. And you know, it's a contemporary saxophone piece, so it's got some bleep-bloops and it's got some things in it, but it's influenced by this traditional Sichuan work song, specifically as they are rowing boats and doing this sort of labor. And so I'm doing this research, and I'm finding that some of the audio tapes that I'm listening to of their traditional music and their singing sounds a lot like African American work songs.
Mm.
I was like, oh, that's a blues, that's a minor third, that's another blues notes. Like the way that they're getting into that, like that's very interesting. Now, of course, I'm not saying that nothing is stolen, nothing like this. I'm just saying that I think we share a lot of things across the world when it comes to how we process life. And so I think just identity is something that maybe we don't speak about a lot in terms of music because we think those things shouldn't go together. But I think that they are just naturally entwined, and that who you are shows through your music and your artistry, whether you want it to or not, because it's you, you're performing. And for me, I think being a Black woman in classical saxophone, a unicorn, if you will, in this situation right now, who also grew up in the church, grew up with a lot of Black music, very much immersed into Black music and culture and way of life. I think that the way I approach things probably is a little bit different than some. And that's just based off of, you know, how I grew up. the things that influenced me. But I think that's okay. And that's the message that I'm trying to bring out. And I think that more people should embrace that. That it's okay. You know, we're different, but that's what makes this art form special. If you're gonna listen to 15 of the same type of competition pieces, the thing that's gonna stand out is the person who comes in there and is truly themselves and not a replica of the, you know, recordings, right? It's just how these things go. So it's like find yourself, embrace that thing, but I don't think you can escape true one essence of artistry without maybe realizing elements of your identity and how they influence you. And those things change. They do. But just recognizing.
You
Yeah.
know,
Oh, sorry.
no, you go for it, because I was like literally just taking all that in, and
Same.
just identity is so important. And I will say, I think we as a society have become way more, the word isn't independent, but more of like close off, so we kind of focus in our own groups and not think about how the world is moving in general. And so we get into those things like, well, only so and so can play this because they are from this place. And that is that music was made to share and to be kind of brung in for many groups. So when we try to just isolate I think it defeats the purpose of music. So we have to share because it brings joy. It brings people together, because it's like, oh my gosh, I didn't know you were going through that. Just like the example you just made about how there's two different, sets of people on the opposite sides of the world. Somehow their music have very similar traits to it. They're both going through certain trials in life. So their natural instinct is to come out and sing it and to make some type of music. Look how that humanistic trait is being portrayed when it comes out. That is the most beautiful thing. And I think we have to all come together to really start to see that and to study that the world is smaller than you may think it is. So all of that goes into that identity portion that you just mentioned. Just really beautiful.
I really think we're more alike than we are different. You know what I mean? Like, and music, yes, as you were saying, it should bring us together. And I don't think that, oh, this was written by a black composer, I can't play that. No, play that. Get in there. You
Get in
know,
there.
like, shepherd that. Put that under your wing and tour it and go. Then reach out to that composer and, you know, grab a drink and grab some food and get to know him, because you probably are way more alike than you are different. But yeah, I think music is for all, and I think some people get scared with the identity conversation. And by no means is this, like, from my perspective, and the way that I try to share this with others, an attack on any one person, right? This is not about saying this person's bad, that person's bad, or this group of people bad, this group of people good. It's never that. Is just understanding that sometimes things are a little bit more nuanced. They're layered. It's a little bit deeper, and that investigating those layers that of identity that may be present, whether that's a class thing, a race thing, as you know, whatever those things may be, can make us better off in our performance and understanding of another person's perspective, which is really, I think, a good part of being a musician, is that we get to experience a lot of different things. More than maybe your average, I think all artists do, right? You get to experience worlds that aren't yours necessarily, but that's kind of the beauty, and you can share that with other people. So I hope, for anyone listening, the identity conversation is never really to scare. And I know people get scared with that word a lot, but it's really just to embrace the fact that we are more alike than we are different, and that you should sing and play and perform that work song just as much as I should. Just as much as I am very much interested in Ottoman Turkish music. That's not my music, but I love it. I find it so fascinating. I mean, I find it to be just gorgeous. But that is, I think, the power of music and sharing, collaborating.
Yeah, I just absolutely. I feel like because there's been maybe, I think the pendulum does this very often. It swings way too far on one side and then it swings the other. And like, I feel like a lot recently there's been people wanting to connect back with their identity and like who they are, their heritage initially, to the point where there's been conversations started about, if you're not of this identity, don't even go near this. Or like, it's like that separation that Anthony was just speaking towards, of like, everyone has their own little factions and no one wants to like interlap. I'm like, that's not how the world has ever operated though, right? There has been so many moments of contact between various cultures, whether that was consensual or not, right, throughout history. And because of that, there has been overlaps of culture, shared new cultures that have been created out of those, like African Americans. Like, we are, right, are a whole new identity that was caused and brought about from a non-consensual like clashing of cultures. But what, look what we've done from that, right? Look what has come from that. And there is beauty in also tapping into what other cultures are doing and like appreciating it, like partaking in it in ways that are like ethical, you know, that it's share, it's collaboration, right? There was a, I think on my first DMA recital, there's a piece I played that was called The Mongol Suite. And there is like a section within, it's all based on like Mongolian like culture. And there was one section that I was like, this is spiritual. Like, I was like, wait a minute, like, this is cute. And I was like, what they got going on over there? And it's just like, it's that truth is like, you know, we are truly are more alike than I think sometimes we allow ourselves to recognize. And there's beauty in that, right? There's beauty in that. There's beauty in identity that you yourself can, like, you know, find your own heritage, your family's roots in. And there's also beauty in the connecting to other people and other cultures. And I think all of that is mixed into an authentic person, and authentic with your music, how you go about life, creating relationships and dialogue and conversations. It's like all mixed in there together. So if anything, you know, students who are listening or anyone who's listening, like, your power is within your identity, and your identity when it is authentic and genuine. And that does not mean just isolating yourself. It doesn't mean taking from others. It's a beautiful collaborative blend, you know, that shows up differently within all of us. So thank you for highlighting that and speaking to that. Where can we find you? Where, if people wanted to like listen to you, to like contact you and talk to you more about the work that you're doing, where can they get in touch with you?
Also, yeah. Is there any upcoming projects you want everybody to know about?
Oh, yes. Okay. Okay, so I'll be posting some more stuff to YouTube here shortly. I actually just gave a concerto performance with our wind ensemble here, so that'll be posted soon, which is great.
I saw that. Oh my gosh! Yes, that was great. Yes.
Yeah, it was really cool. It's a great piece, and I love the composer. So I definitely want to promote that. But maybe if like students, for instance, whether you're a saxophonist or not. If you want to get in touch with me, definitely my email. So it's just khweeler@lsu.edu is probably the best way. Also on my website through the contact form, I respond to that fairly quickly. Things that I'm doing. So like I said, I'll be posting some things to YouTube in the coming months. I've got a recording project that will hopefully come out in spring, featuring like a standard saxophone work and then some new stuff on there. And then I'm in the process of working on the second, but really the full iteration of what I call the Folk Music Reimagined Project, which is commissioning new, emerging, all composers, basically, to write folk music-influenced works for all voices of the saxophone at two levels. So one at the intermediate beginner level and one at the advanced level. And I hope to keep doing this in maybe every other year or every 2 years, but I'm in the process right now of working with Brian Neighbors, who's a composer at LSU, a wonderful composer, and Christopher Trapani, who's also a composer at LSU. They are on board for this, and so I'm working on commissioning them and getting some new works for saxophone out there, which I think will be really, really fantastic. To go back one step, my album release will also feature a new work on it that was part of the Folk Music Reimagined project by Tolga Özdemir, a Turkish composer, as well as standard saxophone work and one by Jordan Van Hemert, who's a saxophone player as well, and a composer and jazz player, phenom, just amazing person. So some things on the come up with recordings and repertoire, and hopefully getting that out to people soon. There's always kind of a million things floating around, so I'm trying to remember all of them. My saxophone quartet, or the saxophone quartet I'm a part of, Medusa Saxophone Quartet, all women, will be performing a Navy Band Saxophone Symposium in January. So if any saxophones are listening, you can find us there. I'll be at University of Massachusetts Amherst in March, part of their New England Saxophone Day. I'll be back actually in the PNW in April, to play Escapades with the Yakima Symphony Orchestra. And probably many things. Oh, also, a little plug for any saxophonists that might be listening and want to do a summer festival. I'll be teaching at the Saarburg International Music Festival, which takes place in Saarburg, Germany, in July next summer, 25. And if you're interested, please let me know. I can give you all the details. Again, I think the best way to contact me is at my LSU email, kwheeler@lsu.edu, or on my website. I think that's it.
Ooh,
Booked and busy.
booked and
I,
busy.
it's,
Yeah.
Man.
I try. I'm trying, y'all. We just all out here trying. We just all out here trying. But you are
Amen.
succeeding. I mean, you are a leading by example, truly. It has been such
Thank you.
an honor to have you on, and just such a treat to be able to talk to you about everything. And thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank
You are
you
now
all.
part of our village permanently, as we all
Yes.
ours. And for anyone listening, please, I mean, all the slew of things that Dr. Wheeler just like told us, go check out the things that are already out there. Look out for what's coming. And we hope that you gain something from this, and we'll see y'all next time. Bye.
Next
Bye,
time.
you all. Thanks so much for having me.